Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is February the 9th, and we're in Daniel. I'll be okay. Thank you. Thank you. We're in Daniel, and we are in Perek Vav, chapter 6. And Daniel is about to be thrown into the lion's den. I don't remember if we're up to Tezayin or Yud Zayin.
16.
Tezayin, 16. Okay. Tezayin, verse 16. So, remember the last thing we said was that Daniel was finally caught red-handed or red-worshipping. I don't know exactly how you express it. Right, they tried...
Caught.
What's that?
He was caught.
He was caught. They tried to... they couldn't catch him on any type of misconduct towards the government, towards the king, because Daniel was perfect in his behavior and in his the way he conducted himself in his government affairs, and they couldn't catch him on that, those who were jealous of him. So they then got the king to make a decree that there should be no prayer at all for 30 days, and they caught Daniel praying, because Daniel did it anyway, davened three times a day, as he always did in his house this time. And they accused him in front of the king of doing that. The king denied it, or the king king didn't believe it. King Darius. And they managed to stall. They filibustered. They managed to keep the process going long enough that it took the entire afternoon. And then, when it was just a few minutes before Shkia, before the sun went down, Daniel had no choice but to daven mincha, to pray the afternoon prayer, which has to be done before sunset. And so he, right there in front of everybody, just turned around and davened. And then he was caught. So now they've got him. The king does not want to see Daniel harmed, but the rule in Paras Umadai is that once the king makes a decree, it cannot be rescinded, there are no exceptions, etc. So Daniel is stuck, or actually Dayavish is stuck. So the pasuk says, Tezayin, verse 16, Beidayin, and then Guvraya Ilech, these men who are trying to frame or to get Daniel caught, Hargishu al Malka, they agitated to the king, Varman la Malka, they said to the king, Da Malka, the king should know, didas the Madai Ufaras, that the law of Madai and Paras, dichal esar ukiyam, that any decree, the malka yehakem, that the king will establish, la lehashnaya, may not be changed. So they emphasize to him that he cannot change, that's the rule, and therefore he must carry out his decree. Beidayin malka amar, then the king said, vahisiu le Daniel, and they brought Daniel, Uremo leguba di Aryavasa, and they threw him into the pit of the lions. Now here's a fascinating thing. As they're throwing him into the pit, on Ne Malka, the king called out, V'amar le Daniel, and he said to Daniel, Elakach di ant plachle besedira, the God that you pray to consistently, Hu yeshezvinach, he should save you. Essentially, Daryavesh uttered a prayer as Daniel is being thrown into the den. He's calling out, the God that you dive into should save you from these lions that you dive into consistently. This is in stark contrast to the past. Whenever there was a threat to Daniel or to the people, the king Nebuchadnezzar never tried to save him. For instance, when Nebuchadnezzar threw Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah into the furnace, he didn't call out, "May your God save you." Instead, he said, "What God could save you from the fire?" As he mocked Hashem, saying that it's not possible for God to save you. As it says, Let's see. Let's look for that verse. So it says, he became very angry, and thank you. And he said to stoke the fire, and let's see, one second. Yeah. He says, back in Perek Gimel, in chapter 3, Pasuk Tezvav, verse 15, it says, at the end of that Pasuk, it says, Uman hu elaka, diyeshezvinchon min yedoi. What kind of God is there that could save you from my hands? Nebuchadnezzar, his sense of power was, God can't save you. I'll throw you to the fire. Here, as Daryavesh is having Daniel thrown into the lion's pit, he calls out, may God save you from the lions. It's a completely different attitude. Pasuk Yudches, verse 18. One more point before I start that Pasuk. Daryavish's words are, the God to whom you worship bisdira, which means consistently. Tadir means consistently. He should save you. Daryavish here is cognizant of a very important fact. A lot of people pray when they're in trouble. As they say, there are no atheists in a foxhole. When a person's in danger, they pray. That's a typical thing. It happens, you find it all over the place. But think of it from Hashem's perspective. Just even though Akash Baruch Hu is not a human being, but let's superimpose a human relationship on that type of prayer. You have someone who you want to have a relationship with, and that person ignores you, turns their back on you, pretends that you don't exist. And then when they want something from you, all of a sudden they acknowledge your existence. How are you going to react to that? Right? Like, what do you mean? What am I, chaplain? Until now, I was nothing. And now, just because, thank you. And now, just because there's something that you're asking me for, so now all of a sudden you pay attention to me, right? That's a human being would ignore that and would reject such an overture. So what do we expect? You know, ignore Hashem. We don't do anything. We don't acknowledge His presence. We don't doubt it. And then someone's in trouble. All of a sudden, oh, Hashem, save me from the danger. Now, Hashem is better than we are, which means that Hashem will sometimes acknowledge such a prayer, because sometimes the whole point of the danger is to get the person to pray. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that is the whole point. Hashem wants to hear the person pray, so sometimes He will create circumstances which will bring the person to Hashem's, to acknowledge Hashem. But clearly, a person who davens to Hashem regularly, who davens to Hashem consistently, both in times of good and times of bad, that's the person that Hashem is more likely to deal with and answer. And that's what Daryavish is saying over here. The God to whom you worship consistently, He should save you. That's what he says. Pasuk Yudches, verse 18. Vehisayis Evan Chada, they took a sharp stone, the Sumas al Pum Guba, and they put it on the mouth of the pit. Vechasma Malka biiz Kasei, and the king sealed it with his signet ring. Ubiizkas Rav Revanohi, and also with the signet of the highest officials of the land. That they shouldn't do what they want to do with Daniel. See, the king was concerned. The king was concerned that in addition to throwing him into the lion's den, once he's in the lion's den, Daniel is very vulnerable. He's completely unprotected. No one is going to protect Daniel in the lion's den. So he was afraid that in the den, it was a pit in the ground. He was afraid that Daniel's enemies would throw things down, would shoot arrows or throw projectiles down at Daniel while he's in the pit. So even if the lions don't get him, they will get him from up top. So the king decided to take a stone. A sharp stone doesn't mean a sharp, like pointy. It means a stone that will fit, like a wide stone with a narrower part to it, which will fit over the hole, cover it up completely, and then he sealed it to make sure that no one broke the seal and moved that stone. That's what he did, yeah.
But it says that the dignitaries also put their signet ring on. These are the dignitaries who tricked him into being caught.
But so. He forced them to. See, here he's got control. See, he doesn't have control over the decree because of this rule. That, as we mentioned last time, it's a weakness of this rule that they can't rescind the decree in Paras and Madai. But this, he can do what he wants. And here he is still the king, and he can still punish someone for insubordination.
Daniel's in the
kitten's
covered with a stone?
That's correct.
Completely covered.
Yes. Excuse me.
So it wasn't worried about
whether
it dropped or not. It was worried about somebody getting in.
Correct. Now the Gemara says,
because it wouldn't matter. Daniel wouldn't know it was sealed anyway.
He couldn't get out of him. He was in a pit. It was several feet deep. He couldn't get up there. And then the lines went. Now, the Gemara points out several things over here. First of all, the Gemara says, we know already from the Chumash that there are no stones in Bavel. Meaning that there may be little tiny pebbles here or there, but there's no big stones in Bavel. Bavel is a swampy area and does not have stones. That's why the Migdal Bavel, the Tower of Babel, was constructed with bricks and not stone, because they didn't have stone. Bavel is notorious for not having stone. Here, there is a stone available. The Medrash says that the Malachim brought it from Eretz Yisrael. That this stone appeared in Bavel for this purpose. Now, the Medrash says, has the following question. The Medrash says, What kind of sense does this make? If Hashem is going to save Daniel from the lions, because he's in the lions' den, and the lions are going to eat him. So if he's going to save Daniel from the lions, and as the Medrash says, and he split the sea, and he got the fire to cool down for Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, so he can't protect Daniel from the projectiles, from the arrows and things that are going to be thrown at him from the top of the pit. Why does it have to be that a stone is put on top of the pit?
To magnify the mace that he does for Daniel.
Well, does it magnify it or does it diminish it?
I would think it magnifies.
Why?
Because nothing can get in or out. Why do you see Gabriel there, the angels protecting him? You see the Kiddush Hashem from it.
Okay. They're not going to see an angel in this case. It's not going to be.
They won't be able to see it, but right. They'll know that he had some divine protection.
What the Gemara says is that the Medrash says that Daryavesh said, "Look, he's in the pit. If his God decides to save him, he's going to save him." But Daryavesh said, "I'm not going to make more trouble than there already is now." As if his God is going to save him from the lions, that's great, but I will do what I can do to protect him. Daryavesh employs the concept of hishtadlus, of putting in one's effort. Do you see, Daryavesh was not a typical person. He was a person who had a concept of God. He understood a little bit, not like Nebuchadnezzar, not like Belshazzar. He had a sense of connection to the Jewish God. And he understood the concept of that you do the best you can. He says, I can't save him from the lions. That's the decree. He has to go to the lion's pit. But I can stop him from being hit over the head with something else. And so he puts the stone on top of the pit. Yeah.
Well, in the wells, they always had stones to protect what they thought was precious, which was the water. And water's like Torah, and here Daniel's the Torah of the people. And the king says that he's precious, I'm going to put this on to protect him. I don't know, that's the way I see it.
Okay, but that's protect him from, you want to protect water from being taken out. Here,
or things falling into it, okay. Right? If an animal falls into it and dies in there, then the water's no good.
Spoiled. Right. Okay, that's a good point.
Well,
If there were stone altars, though. So, it's mentioned.
I don't know if there were stone altars in Bavel.
But not in Bavel.
The Medrash says they didn't have stones there. The Chumash says they didn't have stones there. So.
Can that be explained?
How did they build that statue
why?
Out of
copper? Can what be explained?
Why is it said that there are no stones?
Because there's no stones there. Do you know anything to the contrary?
No, I think that every place on Earth has some stone.
Not necessarily.
Even under the ocean, there's stone.
Yeah, but you have to be able to get to it. There's no area. There's no rock quarries in Bavel. They don't have that in the topography. It's a very swampy area.
The whole area is swampy.
Yeah.
But if it was
it's a marshland. Bubbles of marshland.
How did Nebuchadnezzar get all the gold to build the statue if it's swampy?
Well, the gold he would have brought from other places.
So could they have brought stones in?
Yeah, well, that's what the Medrash says, that they didn't have a stone and the stone was brought.
But how do we know that it was the angels and that at the time of Nebuchadnezzar he didn't... I mean, that could be the leftover stone to get the gold out or something.
Okay, I can only tell you what the Medrash says.
So the next question is, if they didn't have stone, then what was it that sealed?
And that's it. The Malachim brought it. They brought a stone from Eretz Yisrael. That's what he said. Now,
is this only two times in Israel we have pit? Yosef in the pit and Daniel's in the pit?
Yeah, and Daniel's in the pit. That's true.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Did they seal it with their rings because they thought Dariavish would try and save Daniel?
It doesn't say that. I guess that's possible. It doesn't say that that's the reason. I wonder if somebody mentions that as a possibility. I don't know.
That's what the commentary says.
Okay, so good. That's a nice explanation.
Okay, one more question.
Okay, yeah, but we have to move on. Let's see, there's a lot of questions now.
One more question.
Yes, and then we'll.
Then why do we say stone if there is no stone?
I just said
there wasn't another word for it.
No, no. One was brought from Eretz Yisrael.
Oh, one was
an angel brought it from Eretz Yisrael.
Okay, I didn't get that. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Apparently, I didn't get it.
Okay.
Wait a minute. It was brought from Israel. You mean when?
It says then.
It says then.
The angels brought it, Nancy.
Okay.
There's if you look in some of the commentary, it does it. I wasn't reading it.
Okay. Yud Tes 19. Edayin Azal Malka Lehechle. So then the king went to his palace, Uvas Tavas, and he slept while fasting. He didn't eat dinner. The king went to sleep fasting. He was so upset over what was going on, he imposed upon himself a fast and didn't eat. Vidachavan La Hanel Kadamohi. And no dinner was brought to before him. Vishinte nadas alohi, and his sleep was fitful upon him. He was not able to sleep well. He tried to sleep. He was unable to sleep. He was very worried about Daniel. It was very important to him that Daniel be saved. He was very, very distraught. He didn't eat. He wasn't able to sleep well.
Why did he fast? Almost reminds him then they were just sleeping. They didn't eat.
It seems he fasted either out of just being upset, or out of doing teshuva. Now, before I move forward, I want to share with you a story that I heard a couple of weeks ago. I heard this from those of you who know Yisrael Killian. So his kalas, the family that the Kala is very close with in Lakewood. So Rabbi Blonder came down to Atlanta for the Vart. He was here over Shabbos. So he ate lunch with us. He and his kids ate lunch with us. So he said, we were talking about Rabbi Zechariah Findel, Zecharo Bracha, and he has some of his relatives are related to him or married into that family. So Rabbi Findel has a brother in Eretz Yisrael who's also Rabbi Findel. I don't know his brother's name. So he told us that when Rabbi Zechariah Findel was Nifter, so that during the Shiva, they spoke, a lot of some of the relatives spoke to each other, they had not discussed this in the past. So some of the children of the brother in Eretz Yisrael, they were discussing over the phone different things that happened. So the children said, the children of Rabbi Zecharia Findel said, we want to tell you, they did tell the children of the other, their cousins, the children of the other brother, that we want you to know that a few years ago your father was sick, and our father was going, his hat was looking very worn, and we told our father, you got to get yourself a new hat, doesn't look nice. So our father told us, my brother is not well, I can't buy a new hat right now. So the cousins said, well, we want to tell you something. Most recently, while your father was sick, our father was in need, we told our father that he needed a new suit. Mm-hmm. And he said to us, my brother is sick, I can't get a new suit right now. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't, neither one knew what the other one had done. But the sense of that when there is, when a person close to somebody is going through a difficult time, not to indulge and not to, and to go through it one's own tzara, to be an imo nochi v'tzara, to endure it a little bit with the person. And here, the king didn't eat and had trouble sleeping because Daniel was in the pit. Pasuk Chav, verse 20. Beidayin malka bishfar para yikum benagha. Then the king, at Alos HaShachar, which is before dawn, got up, and he got up very early. He got up at first light. Uvehis behala leguba di ayavasa azal. And with great haste, he went to the pit of the lions. The Gemara tells us kings typically sleep into till the third hour of the day. Kings sleep into the day. Meaning the Gemara, remember, at a time when there are no clocks and there is no electricity, so a person's schedule typically runs around the works with the sunrise and sunset. Most people, working people, people who needed to get things done, would get up at dawn. That's when you normally got up. Kings who didn't have that kind of pressure would sleep late. They would get up in the third hour of the day. But here, Dayavish gets up very early. Uchemikreve leguba, when he got close to the pit, leDaniel, to Daniel, bekol atziv ziik, in a sorrowful voice, he cried out. Anei malka, the king called out, v'amr leDaniel, and he said to Daniel, Daniel aved elokachaya, Daniel, the servant of the living God, elokach di ant polach le bistira, the God that you worship consistently, Hayechil l'sheizvusach min aryavasa, was he able to save you from the lions? Did he save you? He has no idea if Daniel's alive or not. Most likely, Daniel has been completely consumed by the lions. Eidayin Daniel im Malka Malil. Then Daniel spoke with the king, and he said as follows, Malka le'olmin chayi, the king should live forever, long live the king. Eloki shlach malach malachei, my God sent his angel, usagar pum ayavasa, and he closed the mouth of the lions, v'lo chabluni, and they did not hurt me. Kol kavel di kadamohi zachu hishtichachas li, because in front of him I was found to have merit. Ve'av kadamach malka, and also in front of you, the king, chavula lo avdis, I didn't do anything wrong. I was totally innocent. I did nothing wrong, both to Hashem and to you. And therefore Hashem saved me from the lions. The implication Daniel is saying is that had I not been faithful to the king, even if I would have been faithful to Hashem, had I not been faithful to the king, there may have been reason for Hashem not to save me from the lions. But because I was faithful both to Hashem and to the king, Hashem saved me.
Does the Daryavish get any schar for this compassion?
Yeah, we're going to see about that. Beidayin Malka Sagi Te'ev Alohi. Then the king was very pleased. He was very happy. Ula Daniel Amar Lahansaka Minguba, and he said that Daniel should be pulled out of the pit. Vuhusak Daniel Minguba, Daniel was lifted out of the pit. Vachol Chaval Lo Hishtechasve, and there was no blemish on him at all. He was perfectly fine. There was not only did the lions not kill him, they didn't hurt him at all. He was perfectly fine. The Hamin Belakay, because he trusted his God. Vamar Malka, the king said, he commanded, Vaisil Guvraya Ilech, and they brought these men, Diachalu Kardsohi Di Daniel, that spoke Lashon Hara about Daniel. He had these men brought before him. Ulagov Aryavasa Remo, they were thrown into the lion's pit. Inun, they, Benehon, their children, Unesheon, and their wives, their entire families were thrown into the lion's pit. Volometo la'ares guba, they didn't even reach the ground of the pit as they were flying through the air, landing in the pit. They didn't even hit the ground. Ad the shlitu vahon aryavasa, but before the lions already got on top and the guys started to attack them. Vachol garmehon hadiku, and all their bones were crushed. So they were completely decimated by the lions. They were consumed and crushed.
200 people.
Whatever it was, the lions absolutely ground them to smithereens.
Now, when she's saying 200 people, I had that question too, because last time we said all those nations, right? All those.
Right. I don't know if it was
advisors.
We don't know if it was all 200. We know that it was the three, and many of the other ones. We don't know if it was all of them,
but their wives and their families.
Not
their daughters, just their sons.
It says their children. I don't know if it means sons.
It says their sons.
Children.
Why would he have said, "O king, live forever"? It's so disturbing.
That's a respectful way to speak to the king.
No, the man just came out from the lion's pit of a man who wanted to kill him.
No, he didn't want to kill him.
He didn't want.
That's the whole story, right?
I understand it, but he threw him in anyway. He had no choice.
Not to prove his. No. That's not true. No, Dayavish did not want to throw him in. He was forced to do it.
Because of his people.
Yeah, Dayavish said, "I want your God to save you." Dayavish is a good person.
I understand that, but
No. It's a misunderstanding.
I don't want to hurt you, but I'm going to.
No. He had no choice. It was the law was above him.
King, he made the law.
He had no choice. The law can't be rescinded.
He has no choice.
He doesn't have a choice. He has no choice. Yeah.
Does the Chafetz Chaim draw anything from this pasuk? He wants to shmez halashim that causes death.
I don't know.
To
it could be. I don't know.
In this
I don't know.
What did the wives and sons or children do to deserve being eaten by lions?
They were related to them.
Korach.
They didn't. But Korach's sons are. They didn't chip on the way down.
But Dasan and Aviram, even the babies were killed. Even the babies were killed. Chavav 26. Beidayin Dayavish Malka, then Dayavish the king, Ksav L'chol Amamaya Umaya V'lishanaya. He wrote to all the nations, all the languages, tongues, all the peoples, Didarin B'chol Ara, that lived in all the lands, Shlomchon Yiskei, your peace should go up. That's a greeting. Your peace should, you should have peace. That's the greeting of the opening line of the proclamation. Min kadamai, from before me, sim te'im, it should be known. Di b'chol shalton malchusi, then all of the reign of my kingdom. Lehavon zo'in v'dochalin min kadam elokei di Daniel. They should fear and tremble from before the God of Daniel. Di hu eloka chaya, that he is a living God. V'kayam la'olmin, and he lives forever. U'malchusei dila sischabal, and his kingdom cannot be blemished, hurt. V'shaltonei ad sofa, and his ruling, his rulership will go till the end. M'sheziv u'matzil, he protects and he saves. V'aved asin v'simhin, and he does signs and wonders. He does miracles. Bishmaya uva'ara, in the heaven and in the earth. Disheziv l'Daniel minyan ayavasa, that he saved Daniel from the hand of the lions. You see what kind of person Dayavish is. This proclamation is one of true belief in Hashem. Daryavesh believes in Hashem. He is a person who only has good to say. He only respects Daniel and respects Daniel's God. Here, unlike with Nebuchadnezzar, recall that when Nebuchadnezzar was so astonished by what happened with Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, if you recall, then he starts to praise Hashem. And as he starts to praise Hashem, he wants to do more. Remember, the Malach came and slapped him on the mouth, and he wasn't able to say more. So we talked about it then, that Nebuchadnezzar did not deserve to be a person who would praise Hashem so much. But Dayavesh is a person who deserves to praise Hashem so much. And then the last pasuk in the chapter, V'Daniel dina hatzlach b'malchus Dayavesh, and this Daniel, he was successful in the kingdom of Dayavesh, u'v'malchus Koresh Parsa, and also in the kingdom of Koresh the Persian. Dayavesh is Darius, Koresh is Cyrus the Persian. Now, we have several things we need to cover over here. Let's take this last pasuk and understand what this means. Daniel was successful in Daryavesh and for Daryavesh and for Koresh. Now, Daryavesh, as we know, was the king of Madai and Paras. He himself was a Mede, and he was his army that defeated the army of Belshazzar and the Babylonians, and now the seat of power has shifted from Bavel to Paras and Madai. Daryavesh will rule for 1 year. At the end of that first year of his reign, he will go to war and he will be killed in battle. And that will be the end of Daryavesh's reign. He has a son-in-law named Koresh. Koresh is a Persian. He's from Paras. That was a political marriage. His daughter married Koresh, who was the leader of Paras, of Persia. And when Daryavesh is killed in battle, then Koresh succeeds Daryavesh as being the head of, as being the king, and therefore the most powerful man in the world. Daniel is successful both under Daryavesh and under Koresh. Koresh will only rule for another, it's not clear exactly how many years. I didn't put it down on the board over there, but he's going to rule for approximately 2 years, and then he will die. I don't know if he died or if he was killed, but he will die, and he is succeeded by Ahasuerus, who of the Purim story. We already mentioned, if you hold the place over here at the last pasuk of Perek Vav of chapter 6 and go back to the first chapter, the last pasuk of Perek Aleph, that will be 21 Chaf Aleph. It says, Vayehi Daniel Achnas Achas the Koresh HaMelech. Daniel was until the first year of Koresh the king. Now, that would seem to imply that although he was successful under Daryavesh and then under Koresh, but it was only for the first year under Koresh. And then he was no longer. With your questions, what does that mean, he was no longer? Now, I mentioned this to you before, but we're going to flesh it out a little bit more now. Under Ahasuerus, we know in the Megillah, Megillas Esther, there is a reference to Daniel. What's that reference to Daniel?
The servant
who helps. What's his name? Hasach. Hasach is Daniel. Hasach is one of the officials that is given to Esther that she can ask him to do things that she needs. And Hasach is Daniel, and he's the one who Esther sends to Mordechai as they communicate with each other secretly about Haman's decree. And Nesach goes back and forth, ferrying back and forth between Esther and Mordechai, giving messages. It's in the fourth parak of Megillas Esther, where you have that, fourth chapter. So the Medrash says Hasach is Daniel. There is a machlokus, there's a difference of opinion, why his name is Hasach. Do you have a pen? Okay. So there is a difference of opinion why his name is Hasach. And as I said, we really talked about this at the end of the first chapter, but I want to talk about it a little further now because we're going to talk a little more about it. So there is a machlokas. Hasach, which is the English is Hasach, and the Hebrew Hasach, Hey Tav Chav. Now, in Hebrew, a Hey and a Ches are often interchangeable. There are many words where you can use a hey or a ches. They are related letters. And the Medrash says, the Medrash expounds this word hasach and says it comes from the word chatach, which means to cut. Chatach means to cut. Lachtoch means to cut. And so the Medrash says that Hasach Zed Daniel, the Gemara really says it, that this is Daniel because it means to cut. And it means Daniel for one of two reasons. Either because Shekol Divrei Malchus Nechtachin Al Piv, all the words of the kingdom are Nechtachin, are cut by his word, which is a language of authority, that Daniel was an authority figure in the court of Achashverosh, in the palace of Achashverosh, Shekol Divrei Malchus Nechtachin Al Piv, all the words, all the decrees of the kingdom were cut by his mouth, which means Daniel was the one responsible for enacting all the decrees of Achashverosh. He was the one who ran the country. He was the effective one running the country. That's one explanation of Chatach, Hasach. And the other explanation is Shechatchuhu migdulaso, that he was cut down from his greatness. That whereas under Nebuchadnezzar and Evel Merudach and Belshazzar and Koresh and Dayavish and Koresh, under all those kings, Daniel was the top of the kingdom, and his fame only grew, and his power only grew, and his standing only grew. But when he got to Achashverosh, Chatchuhu migdulasa, they cut him down from his greatness. Those are the two opinions in the Gemara of what it means that his name is Hasach. That difference of opinion reflects itself in what does it mean in the first chapter when it says that Daniel was until Koresh, the first year of the king Koresh. Which Koresh is it talking about? Because after the case of Belshazzar and the handwriting on the wall, which we have the years over here starting with Nebuchadnezzar, after that comes Daryavesh. Daryavesh, who lasts 1 year. I'm just counting from the really, we're going to have to change some of it. We're going to change the, but we'll keep it like this for now. He lasts 1 year. Then comes Koresh. And he lasts 2 years. He lasts 2 years. And then comes Achashverosh. He lasts... What's that? He lasts... 13. Is it 13 years he lasts? I'm saying it's 3. He lasts... 11, I think it's 11 years. I'm pretty sure it's 11 years. Say
it's 11 years.
What's that?
If you want to look here.
What does it say over there?
Keep the page there. And then Sorry, I'm pretty sure he lasts 11 years. That's Cheshverish's reign. Right, they have it as they have it that his son takes over, and the 13th, right. Okay, so he lasts. Okay, thank you. That's the years a little bit difficult. So he lasts 13 years, or actually, we'll call it 12 years.
86.
Yeah, let me just see one thing over here. One second. Yeah. Right. You know what? The way I did it before is what year they took over. I'm sorry. I got to write the numbers again in the way that it's the year that they took over that we're interested in. Daryavish took over right away in that year 71. That's when he took over. Koresh took over in year 72 from where we were counting, and then Ahasuerus took over in year 74. Then 13 years later, which is year 87, that is when Ahasuerus' son takes over. Esther and Ahasuerus' son. And his name is
Darius the second.
Or Koresh the second. He's called both names. He's called Daryavesh Koresh. He's got both names. So the question is, when it says that Daniel lasted until the first year of Koresh, does it mean the first Koresh, which is before Ahasuerus, or the second Koresh, which is after Ahasuerus? That depends on how you understand the word Hasach. If the word Hasach means Shekol Divrei Malchus Nechtachin Al Piv, that all the words of the king were cut by his mouth, which means Daniel was still in a position of authority at the time of Ahasuerus, time of Esther, then it means he lasted till the first year of the second Koresh. If Hasach means he was Chatchuhu Migdulaso, that he was cut down from his post, and he was now a lowly servant in the palace, then it would mean he lasted till the first year of the first Koresh. That's the two opinions, depending on how we understand the word Hasach. So either Daniel remained in his authority and a respected official till the first year of Koresh, or the first year of the after Ahasuerus of Koresh here. Now the difference is this, that that in the first year of Koresh, there was an incredible thing that happened. And that is that Koresh authorized the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. Koresh said, it is time to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. This was 70 years after the second year of Nebuchadnezzar. The second year of Nebuchadnezzar is the year that he conquered Eretz Yisrael for the first time. He didn't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. He didn't take anybody into exile. But in that first year, the second year of Nebuchadnezzar, this was 70 years later that Koresh authorizes the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. The Jews go up to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Not all of them. Some go. They begin to rebuild. Then the enemies of the Jews living in the area send word back to Koresh that the Jews are actually trying to mount a rebellion. Koresh is persuaded, and he stops the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And then when Koresh dies and is succeeded by Ahasuerus, Ahasuerus completely stops it. When Koresh stopped it, it was sort of stopped, but there was still hope that it might be reinstated. But then Ahasuerus becomes king, and that's it. There's no building of the Beis HaMikdash now. When Daryavish / Koresh, the son of Ahasuerus, takes over, and he's the son of Esther and Ahasuerus, he authorizes the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, and it actually happens. In the next year. I have to rewrite the years to get them all straight over here. But it happens in the next year, after he becomes king, that he authorizes the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. So it took a few years to build, but the construction began.
When did the Ezra Nechanya come back?
What is that?
Did the Ezra Nechanya go back at that
time? Yeah, well, the Sefer Ezra Nechanya is discussing what happens here. It really starts with Koresh, and where they began to rebuild, and then when they actually rebuilt.
That's 70 years after
the... So this is 70 years after the actual destruction. So really it should be 89, and we'll put down 89, but the truth is we'll have to tweak these numbers a little bit better. This is what happens at the time of this first Koresh, that he authorizes the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. As we mentioned, it was ambiguous when the 70 years should be counted from, and everybody was bothered by it. So, as we mentioned, Balshatzar made a party because he thought he counted correctly. He was killed. Achashverosh made a party because he thought he counted correctly. Vashti was killed. Vashti, by the way, was a granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, right? Achashverosh married. So they had all these counts of the 70 years. But it wasn't just, as we mentioned, that the years were kind of skewed, that they counted the years wrong. They also didn't know when to count from. They thought that you're supposed to count from the Nebuchadnezzar, maybe you're supposed to count from the Golos of Yechonia. But in fact, in reality, the count was from the destruction, from the actual destruction. But they weren't completely wrong. There was an aspect of counting from the Nebuchadnezzar. And that was Koresh's beginning to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. The foundation was laid 70 years from the Nebuchadnezzar. The building wasn't actually built until here. It is possible, and I can't say this for sure, that had we deserved it, then the Beis HaMikdash would have been built in the time of Koresh. We didn't deserve it, and so only the foundation was laid, and then the Purim story is actually what triggers the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, this is all very central to the story of Daniel with the lions. Why is it central to it? Because, let's think this through for a moment. Why, thank you. Why is Daniel thrown into a pit of lions? What is the significance of a pit of lions?
The lions represent Yehuda, Malchus.
Usually. So lions represent Malchus, they represent royalty, Yehuda. Gur Arye Yehuda. Yehuda is a lion. First a young lion, then an older lion. But he's a lion. And we know that is the symbol of Yehuda, is the lion. Daniel is from which Shevet? Which tribe is Daniel from? From Yehuda. Not only is he from Yehuda, he is a direct descendant of David HaMelech. There were no kings in the second Beis HaMikdash. Royalty ended with the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. It will be reinstated when Mashiach comes. But the second Beis HaMikdash did require leadership from Yehuda. Who actually provided the leadership from Yehuda when the Jews actually built the second Beis HaMikdash?
Shlomo.
No, that's the first Beis HaMikdash. What's that? No, not Daniel. Ezra was a Kohen.
Nehemiah.
Nehemiah, who is along with Ezra, Nehemiah is also a direct descendant of David HaMelech. He's known as Zerubbabel. And Nehemiah / Zerubbabel, same person, was the descendant of David HaMelech. Had there been a king, it likely would have been Nehemiah. So who was the representative of David HaMelech at the time when the foundation of the Beis HaMikdash is laid? That's Daniel. And throughout the Golos, from the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, even before that, from the time that Yechaniah goes into Golos, from the time that the royalty is already challenged, Daniel rises to a position of authority. And he is the representative of David HaMelech. He is our king in exile. He's not the king, but he represents Yehuda, he represents David HaMelech throughout the exile. He is never first in command. He's not the king. The king is always Achashverosh, Evel Merudach, Balshatzar, Koresh, Dar Yavesh, Achashverosh. He's not the king.
but he is in a very, very high and powerful position because he represents David HaMelech. Daniel is thrown into a pit of lions, and the lions can't touch him. That is another way of Hashem showing that my Malchus is returning. Because the royalty, the line of David HaMelech, represents the kingdom of Hashem. Our kings are not above the law. They are the ones who enforce the Torah. But the Torah is above all else. And the king is our example of how to keep the Torah. When we have a king in Yisrael, and when Mashiach comes, the king represents the Malchus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the kingdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When Daniel is thrown into the pit with the lions, it's not coincidental that it's lions as opposed to snakes or scorpions or bears. It could have been a lot of different things that could have killed him. It's lions, and it's to show that Daniel represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kingdom. He represents David HaMelech's kingdom, which is representing Hashem's kingdom, and that kingdom is reinstating itself. And Daryavesh is the king at the time, and Daryavesh is a we don't know how righteous, but certainly more righteous than the kings who came before him. And it's under him / his son-in-law Koresh, who seems to also have some goodness in him, and it's under that combination that the Beis HaMikdash begins to be rebuilt, that the foundation is laid. Achashverosh is a Rasha, he's an evil man, and under him there is no construction. But then, with his son, Daryavesh / Koresh, Esther's son, then it really is reinstated, and now Nehemiah / Zerubbabel, he is the representative of the Malchus of the kingdom of David HaMelech / the kingdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the progression over here. Whether Daniel makes it all the way till the second Koresh, or he's only in the first Koresh, if he's only in the first Koresh, so we understand after that, then there is a lull. There is the kingdom of David is rising, represented by Daniel. It reaches its apex under Daryavesh / Koresh. That actually triggers the building of the Beis HaMikdash. But then, apparently we didn't deserve it, and there is Chatchuhu Megdulaso. He's cut down from his post, Daniel is. That's not coincidental that the Beis HaMikdash, its building is halted, and Daniel is cut down from his post, because the two things work together. As Daniel's star is rising, so is the Beis HaMikdash. As Daniel's star is declining, so is the Beis HaMikdash. That's what this, if you say it, it means it was cut down from his post, that's what it would mean. And so, throughout the reign of Achashverosh, with the story of Purim, there is a lull in the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. But once the story of Purim happens, then it comes back, and now Zerubbabel Nehemiah, he's the one who leads the Jews, along with Ezra, and the Beis HaMikdash is actually rebuilt. If we understand that Daniel was still powerful under Achashverosh, then he makes it till Koresh, but at that point, I assume he passed away. I assume that's what happened. I don't know exactly when he passes away, but maybe we'll learn about that later. But then he is succeeded in the leadership of the Jewish people by Nehemiah / Zerubbabel. This is why the natural thing to learn after Sefer Daniel is Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah, because that's really the next step in the story. The Purim story comes in there also, but we're all familiar with the Purim story. We get it every year. Mm-hmm. We don't learn Daniel and Ezra and Nehemiah every year. So Daniel are the stories preceding Megillas Esther. Ezra and Nehemiah follow Megillas Esther. That's essentially how it breaks down. At this point, this is the most famous story of Daniel. We know that Daniel is always, everybody always talks about the lion's pit. And in fact, Yisrael Killian on the website has a picture of a lion. Like, that's the picture of Sefer Daniel. Right? That's the famous story. But they probably have it in the front over here also. But from here on in, the book changes. We now have a different type of discussion. Where until now we've had a bunch of fascinating stories and incredible nisim that happened, now we're going to have various dreams and nevuos, prophecies that Daniel has.
Goes back to Hebrew now?
Not yet. It'll go back to Hebrew in Parakhes in chapter 8. The next one is still in Aramaic.
How do you
there'll be a lot of very interesting references here. Particularly, we're going to see Daniel attempting to make his own calculation of the 70 years, as we will see. So this is going to be as we move forward. What's your question?
How do you place the prophets at this time? Where are we with these 70 years? With whom?
With which prophets?
Yeah.
Well, in Bavel, we had Yechezkel. He's around for the first part of Daniel. I don't know when he passes away. We have Yirmiyahu in the beginning also.
Because there's no more idol worship now. The Second Temple did not have idol worship.
Yeah, but there still is at this point. The Second Temple hasn't been built yet.
Right. But once the Second Temple comes, it's a whole different ballgame of challenges, right?
Correct. But the final Nevi'im, prophets, are Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. They will come up and save for Daniel, as we'll see.
Who's the angel that saved him over here?
It doesn't say.
Doesn't it just say angel?
Doesn't say. Maybe there is. I don't know it.
What's Chag did Dayavish get for his?
I don't know what Chag he got, but he's obviously recognized as a somewhat righteous king. I don't know how righteous, but somewhat righteous. Yeah.
Either Darius II or Cyrus II, whatever you want to call him, was Jewish because he was Esther's mm-hmm. son. Does he live as a Jew? Does he marry a Jewish woman, or he just gets lost?
He's raised in the palace. He's raised as.
So was Moshe.
Yeah, but he's raised as a. I mean, he does. We don't find that he remains, that his line remains Jewish.
So he rebuilds the Second Temple. He's given Zchus to do that, but that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two things. One is, if Daniel decides he goes back to Jerusalem, right, it's because it says that.
If what?
If it says in the commentary,
yeah,
that the king decides that whoever wants to go back to Jerusalem can go back.
Yeah, that's what Koresh is going to say.
So it kind of makes sense that he would be in Jerusalem if the temple was going to
stay. I don't think he went back. I don't think he went back, but I'm not sure.
Well, the other thing is, I'm not sure either. Mm-hmm. I'm just asking.
I'm pretty sure he did not, because if he was still there for the Purim story, yeah. So he did not go back.
The other thing is, if the stone was brought from Jerusalem or from Israel, and the angels brought it, is what it says. The idea is that the angels brought it. Then would that be a symbol of the building of the Second Temple?
It's interesting. I don't know. It's a good point.
Or the stone went into exile.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.